Hi, my name is Matt Jaded, and this is the Those Who Can, Teach and Do podcast series hosted at opensource.com. In this series, we'll be having conversations with people who are working hard to bridge the worlds of education and open source, often playing the role of a learner as they go. In this conversation, we talk with Ian Utting, a member of the Computer Science Education Research Group at the University of Kent in Canterbury, England, and a core contributor to the Blue Jay Project. This interview was recorded at the 2011 Technical Symposium of the Special Interest Group in Computer Science Education, which took place in early March in Dallas, Texas. Full Creative Commons attribution rolls at the end. So, my name is Matt Jaded. I'm here at SIGC 2011. I'm chatting with Ian Utting from the University of Kent and one of the core members of the Blue Jay team. And so part of the reason that I wanted to catch a member of the Blue Jay team while they were here is because Blue Jay has a long history in the computer science education space. And so would you mind, and for a long time was free but not open.
That's right. For a long time the license was effectively do what you like with this, but if you want to make money off it, we want to cut. And the source was held fairly close. The source wasn't available even for the asking, although there were a few people that had the source for a while, but it was closed. Partly, I think that was a concern about forking. Blue Jay is a very minimal environment. It's a development environment for beginners to programming. It's very carefully designed to minimize the baggage they have to come to terms with when they're learning to program. And we knew from the community that everybody wants one extra feature, and those features are completely disjoint. And we, given the very small team that develops and maintains Blue Jay, there's four developers working full time on Blue Jay, and there are over a million concurrent simultaneous users worldwide. So it's a big community, and a very small development team. And we were concerned for a long time about our ability to combat feature creep, and that was our real problem. Eventually, that became problematic. I mean, there were features we wanted to put in. Often, those features were distributed under various open source licenses.
Can you give an example of what you mean by that?
JUnit. We wanted to do some printing support, but that turned out to be under the Eclipse license, and so on and so forth. Subversion clients, that's sort of largely library use. Very rarely did we want to modify existing open source. And that became problematic for us, in moral terms as much as in legalistic terms. And we were also talking not so much about Blue Jay, but about its sister project, Greenfoot, which shares a code base. We were talking to AP about possibility of using that in APCS in the States. And they were concerned, quite rightly, about the small size of the group. And what would happen if we got bored or got run over by a bus or what have you. And we were talking about maybe putting the code base into escrow for them and so on and so forth. Right. And then we reached the point where we thought, oh, this is silly. The fact that the closed nature of the code base is now causing us more problems than it's solving. Right. We have confidence that we can sustain, we've got enough of visibility now that we're confident we can sustain our control. And so we, when the decision came, it was fairly easily made. And we just flipped over. Deciding on the precise terms of the license was a much longer business, but the decision to go open was eventually fairly simple.
And I can imagine, in part, Blue Jay has existed in the education space for some time, so that decision, I mean, you were already giving it away.
Oh yeah, it was always free as in beer.
Yeah. What license did it end up under?
It's under GPL2 with the ClassPass exception.
And I'm not personally familiar with the ClassPass exception.
Partly, the ClassPass exception says that you can it was developed by Sun Microsystems for their Java runtime.
Okay.
And it says effectively that you can put your...
We can look it up later.
You can look it up later.
And I can put a link in.
Yeah, okay, that would be much better.
Let's move on from that. That's fine.
The issue was that we were concerned that if we just had a straight GPL v2, right, then, for instance, there's an extension mechanism, a plug-in architecture, right, in BlueJay, mm-hmm, which is quite widely used by people using a number of different licenses for their software.
Right.
And we were concerned that if we went with straight GPL2, that would entrain their plugins. LGPL wasn't quite right either.
No, it isn't.
But the ClassPath exception is explicitly designed for that case.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yep.
So we had the extension problem with BlueJay, where we, for instance, somebody had built a printer, a pretty print extension, mm-hmm, that used an Eclipse-licensed print engine,
right,
pretty printer. Now that would have been incompatible,
yep,
with a GPL2 requirement on the extensions, and so on and so,
yes,
on. Also, of course, on Greenfoot, people's scenarios in Greenfoot,
oh,
actually use part of the Greenfoot core and distribute with part of the Greenfoot core.
Yep.
So again, we had a concern that, yep, if it had been GPL2, we'd have been trained everybody's scenarios.
Now, I'm sure there are those in the open source community who would say, well, yes, but.
Yeah. Explaining that to a group of 30, 13-year-olds who just want to make the zombie eat the brains,
yep,
is not a conversation we wanted to have.
No. No, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
So that's pretty exciting. As part of that trend, so it's going to sound like a dumb question in some ways. So what kind of infrastructure then did you switch to, or did you sort of flip the switch on your existing infrastructure to say, here's read access?
No, we kept it real simple. We just build a tarball,
okay,
of the source code at every release, okay, and just make that available.
Is it possible for me to find a tree that I can track trunk, for example? Or?
No.
Okay. Again, is it time management?
If there is ever demand, we'll think about,
sure,
it.
Sure. Got it. Why do more work in advance of needing to?
Yeah. We're not proselytizing here. We're just following the line of least resistance.
Absolutely makes sense.
Yeah.
Absolutely makes sense.
We know there are a bunch of BlueJay variants out there.
Really? That was going to be my next question. What has happened?
A number of people have said, oh, I'd really like BlueJay to do this, I'll work on it. And let you have it. We go, oh, cool, that would be really good. If you need any help, you know where we are. And by and large, it then goes quiet. The BlueJay user community is by and large a community of students.
Right.
Those million users are almost all freshman CS students. And so they typically think, oh, it would be great if BlueJay would do this, and then they look at the code base and go, oh my god. We have a bunch of people out there who have done particular things with BlueJay. We know about them because they've changed the version number,
right,
and we see that in our logs.
Right.
But there may very well be other people who haven't bothered with that, and we won't know about that. But they're typically little local minor tweaks,
sure,
rather than huge reworks.
I myself could imagine changing, for example, who wrote it, for my own ego as I use it with my students. I'm kidding. I said that on tape.
You said that on tape.
All right. So there's that at point one. No, that's really cool. And so that's what I think is interesting is that what I think will be interesting over time is to see having just finished a panel where we were talking about getting students involved in open source development, that looking to BlueJay and saying, actually, it might be possible then, if it were something that an educator wanted to do, to bring students to the project. But at that point, then that becomes something that motivates the, well, let's mirror our repository to a Git or any of a host of things.
We don't have a problem with that. And we do know that somebody has copied our tarball into a Git repository somewhere.
Sure.
That's fine.
And in some ways, in that regard, if they do anything interesting, it certainly makes it easier to see what's up.
And if somebody wants to share the development load, then that's fine by us.
That's right. Cool. Anything else you'd like to say about that transition?
No, that's good.
I personally think it's really pretty exciting. So
thank you.
Thank you very much.
The Those Who Can Teach and Do podcast series is made available under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike version 3.0 license. The audio for this series is processed using the open source application Audacity. If ninjas had time to listen to music, they would listen to the annual New England Xylophone Symposium by Do Cashatiro. That is the piece we are listening to in the background, which is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution version 3.0 license. Editorial support and unicycle riding lessons provided by Marianne Bitter and the rest of the opensource.com team. This is Matt Jaded. Thanks for listening.